We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fellas, listen up. All you ever ask for is an opportunity. You got it today. Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
The Rockpile Report with Buffalo Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer.
Be aggressive. You have literally nothing to lose. You're a borderline football team.
If I don't keep laughing about this stuff, my teeth are going to turn around and devour my brain.
The Bills make me wanna.
Diana Rossini said that she was texting with an NFL coach or an NFL GM, and they said next week is going to be a massacre all around the league. A mass. Pete, your favorite player? He didn't have his best year last year? Fucking gone. Gone. Guy you own a jersey of? He didn't put up his best stats he's ever had? Get him the fuck out of town. There's going to be deals made. There's going to be the Arizona Cardinals owner said there's going to be a seismic shift in the NFL coming up next week because there's going to be massive names that are going to get cut in this NBA idea that has trickled into the NFL with super teams happening. And the Arizona Cardinals, they added J.J. Watt the other day for $31 million over the next 2 years. Excited to see how that works out for them. Stephon Gilmore might be on the trading block or is allegedly a foregone conclusion. He's going to get traded out of New England. If the Arizona Cardinals pick him up, are we talking about that defense really becoming something over there? And are we talking differently about everything that's going to happen? But next week, big names are going to be on the move, and that means we get a lot of conversation about imagine, insert big name here, at team that's probably going to make a Super Bowl run next year.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Rock Pile Report podcast. I'm your host, Bills season ticket holder Drew Geer. That's my producer, Chris Krueger. And that was Pat McAfee from his show over on YouTube talking about the bloodbath that's going to come in the next 7 days when it comes to the veteran NFL community. Hot damn. Chris, we got a hell of a show for everybody tonight. Tyler Dunn. Tyler Dunn of national recognition.
It's our biggest get.
I don't know about biggest get, but
he's been on Cowherd and he's been on the NFL Network's top 10 shows. See, that I've watched. That I've watched on YouTube countless times.
I love how you're having this manic energy before we have a guest on. I guess I just look at it as here's a guy whose writing I respect, whose work I love, and I can't wait to talk to him. I'm excited. You have nervous energy, which I think is adorable. You also have something else that you tweeted about over the weekend that I think our listeners need to hear about.
That's right. Everybody saw the Everyone saw my tweet on Friday night of me and my girlfriend at Mercy Hospital over on Abbott Road. So everybody wants to know the story of what happened. And I do like a lot of the – you saw a lot of the retweets I made of people with their own ideas of how they think I screwed up my ankle. And I love Kyle Trimble's tweet the best. He was like, imagine being the ER nurse, you know, middle of the night Friday – and this kid rolls in with those jeans and that hair, and you have to take care of them. This is what happened. So Friday is a Friday night, Friday that takes place every other Friday, because Friday I got my haircut. Left work, haircut, you know, I get my dog, for those that need to know, Golden Hour on Elmwood, that's where I get my dome carved. Left there, go to my girlfriend's to have dinner with her and her kid, who, that's what I do every Friday night, dinner at her house with her and her kid. Her kid was not present for dinner, so it was just me and her. He went out with his dad for a fish fry. So he comes home. I'm sitting on the couch. Kid walks through the door. My girlfriend is holding the door open, saying something to her ex-husband. The dog, right out the door. Both, and I, as it was happening, I was like, because I know. You got people like Bruce Exclusive, Bruce Nolan, and I'm probably a lot of you people that are pro dogs, but I hate this dog. I hate this dog a lot. High energy, doesn't listen. There are times where Jessica and I are having dinner, and then we finish eating, and we're in the kitchen like cleaning up, and then you look out in at the kitchen table, and the dog is standing on the table like just sniffing around for food. Like, it doesn't listen. When you tell it to get off, like, it went to obedience school and all that, but it high energy and it doesn't listen. So dog bolts out the front yard and it's not listening. You have a treat. Nah, it thinks you're chasing it. So it wants to play throughout the whole neighborhood. So we start walking away, and this is probably where I should have gone back and got my car, but I'm just pacing with the dog. I have it in my vision at night, and I end up about 3/4 of a mile away from her place. There's a elementary school, which is kind of like the halfway.
My son's elementary school.
Yeah,
future.
It's like there's an elementary school about halfway between my girlfriend's and Drew's, and they live very close to each other. I was closer to that school than I was her place. And I kind of lost the dog, and then I see it out of my periphery. I turn, and I'm on the sidewalk. There is a snow pile, not big at all, on the curb, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to step in this. I'll just, like, I don't have to get a running start and jump over it back onto the street. I just do a little leap. Huh? I leap over. Or roll my ankle on the street, and I'm like, I grab my ankle, like, as soon as I hit the ground, I grab my ankle. I can feel that I have a water balloon in my hand attached to my ankle. I'm rolling around in pain, and my girlfriend's not near me. She is down the street a little bit with her and her kid in tow, and I'm it's like 7 o'clock at night, and I'm yelling for her. I'm like, I'm hurt. injured. So she comes and is like, oh my god. She's like, I'll go get the car, and so I get up, and I'm like, I look like I came from The Walking Dead. I'm just like dragging my foot, and I'm in so much pain, and it doesn't even occur to me that my car keys are in my pocket, and I had parked very close to the garage to a point where my girlfriend has to do like a 9-point turn in her garage and the space that I gave her between the front of my car and her garage to get out to come get me. So I'm dragging my foot. I make it back to her street. I walked like 1/4 mile on a bum foot. So, and we had to go to the ER, which by the way, if you work at Mercy Hospital in the ER and you're a nurse, go fuck yourself. The way that I was treated, like, was just like,
whoa,
herding sheep. Like, I got a room, and they brought in an x-ray machine, x-rayed my foot. They're like, "Oh, just a sprain, you know, no broken bones. Get out of here." Oh, with all this paperwork and my phone and my car, everything that I brought, I'm supposed to just shove everything in my, like, get a wheelchair and wheel me out back to your curbside pickup where my girlfriend is sitting to pick me up. It was the worst.
Here's what I love about this diatribe you just went on. You managed to offend people in the medical community and make me laugh like a son of a bitch. This is hilarious.
Yeah, so I
love all of it.
The whole weekend I had my foot up, and my girlfriend is, she works in the medical field. She was a nurse, now manages a team of nurses. So, you know, I was in good hands to begin with this ankle injury. This is fun. Saturday, we're watching the Sabres game, and she's kind of like rubbing my foot to, you know, hopefully I'll get all the fluid out of your foot and, like, work it down.
Doesn't work like that.
Yeah. She's, like, massaging my foot gently, and then I just go, and she goes, "Oh, my God, what? Did I do something?" I was like, "Oh, no, it was the Sabres."
The Sabres hurt me. Chris, I had a swollen foot once like that. Like, I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at what you're working with. Oh, my God, it's purple like an eggplant. It's like an eggplant attached to your calf.
My middle three toes are all black and blue.
Yeah, it's gross.
It looks disgusting. Now, here's the
thing. I've had that, and I worked at the company that I brought up during the company that I've talked about for years that I despised working for, eventually quit, found my actual current job, career that I love.
Was this the company that I brought you my chicken wing dip?
No.
And I asked you, this is a true story, I made chicken wing dip for Drew for the Super Bowl because we weren't, this is like before we were the way we are friends now. And I was like, "Well, I mean," and you knew my chicken wing dip was the shit back then, and I was still in the process of conforming it to what it is now, but I did show up at a company that you worked at, and I brought you chicken wing dip, and I asked the woman at the front desk, "Yeah, I'm looking for Drew Gear," and she was like, "Nobody here works by that name." And then I called you on your cell phone, and then you came to the front, and then she looked at me, and she was like, "Oh, Andrew."
Oh, that morning.
You couldn't make the connection that Drew and Andrew.
That was the morning servicing company where I'm pretty sure I threatened to discharge a flare gun in the office. I got in trouble for that, but I digress. My favorite part about this is that you have all of these things happening to you, and I just.
Well, the best part of it was.
But hang on. So I've been there, and my wife. Now, here's your girlfriend massaging your foot. My wife saw me. That was my first interaction with my now wife. She was just a coworker of mine at this company that I despised and eventually quit. And as I'm laying there, sitting there in my cubicle, in my area, with my foot up on a chair, one of her minion from Human Resources got stuck in our part of the office over in accounting in a fishbowl. Because they had to segregate us from the rest of the office because we yelled too much, so it had to be quiet. So we had our own door, and inside there, her minion, like, they ran out of space in Human Resources, so they put her assistant behind me, of all people. And as she's walking by, she goes, "Who's this guy with?" And she goes, "Oh, they were going to lunch together, her and her minion." And her minion was like, "Well, I gotta stop at Wegmans and get an ice pack for this guy who works there in AR. And she's like, why are you getting him an ice pack? And she goes, "Well, he just seems like he's in a lot of pain." And her reaction was, "What a wuss. To hell with this guy." So she showed up and talked trash to me at my desk while my foot was the size of a water balloon. And now we're married.
Yeah, that's
it. I love that your dynamic with your girlfriend is different than mine and my wife. It works for both of our personalities. We both need something different. Chris, I'm glad you're able to walk around. And we're going to start a GoFundMe for your stupid foot.
We should do that. But
No. But there's going to be a punishment involved. Just wait. Folks, follow us at Rock Power Report for more details. But we have to move on.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
All right, Chris, but that's enough about you and your busted ankle. Nobody wants to hear about how unathletic you are. Athlete my ass. With that, I want to bring in tonight's guest as I pour myself a little bourbon on the rocks. I'm excited about this, Chris. I really am. Mr. Tyler Dunn, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great, guys. Man, thanks so much for having me on. I'm glad we were able to make it happen.
No, I'm glad you guys – thank you for finding the time to join us. It's kind of funny. Around the world and back again to Buffalo, New York, Mr. Tyler Dunn. I mean, you really have had kind of a world tour of a career this far, and you're not that much – I'm not that much older than you are. You've really, like, in just in a short amount of time, your career has really taken you some places.
It has, man. Yeah, that's right. We're old Section 6 Class D foes. I just found out you're a North Collins guy. I'm an Ellicottville guy, so almost had to end this podcast right then. Surprised we're still taping and rolling here. But yeah, you know, from Ellicottville, school at Syracuse, lived in North Carolina. First job there, came back to Buffalo, got the job in Milwaukee, covered the Packers at the Journal Sentinel for a little over 4 years. And then, yeah, came back 2015 for Rex Ryan's first year, which was just, you know, batshit crazy start to finish. It had to be the most fun time I've ever had on the job. You just didn't know what was going to happen day in and day out. And he let the players say what they want, which is, you know, our dream in that locker room. And then Bleacher Report reached out. They were expanding there. Writing department, BR Mag, wanted me to write features. It was great. Loved it. Got to do the long form for 4 years. But like any big company, you know, you get the sense, the feeling that the direction could shift at any moment. So that moment came and decided, you know what, after a decade plus covering this league, F it, let's do it. Let's figure out a way to go independent. Loving it. Loving the Substacks platform. GoLongTD.com, able to just kind of cover the game through that enterprising lens with all the relationships I've kind of built over the years. So, you know, it's been awesome, guys. I guess that's kind of my rambling world tour there. But,
I mean,
you
know, you're, no,
Buffalo
you're,
always has had that magnetic pull. And that's kind of where I intend to stay the rest of our lives here.
That's awesome. Well, it's welcome home. And I got to tell you, your written work over there is incredible. I mean, that was as a Sports Illustrated subscriber when I was a kid, the thing I looked forward to was the long form articles. And when all of that kind of died, when blogging took over, and then once Vox Medias of the world started buying everything up and turning everything into clickbait and articles that have the content, they might as well be tweets. I really kind of started to loathe sports journalism to a certain degree. And your work over there at Go Long TD has been really refreshing. Because I can tell the passion you have for it, but also, you know, when we've talked about this previously before you came on, I love the work you put into humanizing athletes because it really is a dynamic that doesn't get enough attention. And then you have your podcast, the Go Long podcast with first of all, how the hell did you end up with Bills, former Bills director of personnel Jim Monos as a co-host?
You know what? And I appreciate all the kind words, man. Thanks so much. It's a true story. You know, I was reporting on that Josh Allen two-parter that I kind of debuted Go Long with, you know, the fact that there's a lot of pressure on him mid-season. They've got this team that could win it all. Is he the answer? And yes, the owner fell in love with Patrick Mahomes before anybody else. And yes, he let Sean McDermott kind of run the show and they didn't take him and they end up with Josh Allen. But I mean, I found that all out via Jim Monos, and we were just chatting over beers at Resurgence downtown. He lives nearby. We're talking, you know, one story after another, some off on the record, some off the record. You know, he's out of a job. And at one point, I think he actually brought it up. He's like, dude, how about a podcast? Like, we could just hit record right now, and I think people would be interested in it. And I was like, yeah, hell yeah, let's do it. And, you know, like you guys know that there's a lot of podcasts out there. It's hard to kind of, you know, find your niche, find your space. But we just like bullshitting, drinking, you know, 3, 4, 5 beers, telling stories that hopefully people haven't heard before. It's been a lot of fun.
See, that's our crowd. That's what I mean. That's why they show up for us every week. Is because I drink a bucket of beers and rant about football intelligently, but rant. And
well, you know what? When you drink, I really believe this. When you drink, you get honest, right? So
exactly,
get a little alcohol in you, let the honesty flow.
Yeah, what is it? A drunk man's words or a sober man's thoughts?
And what I mean, for our listeners, I want you to go check out. Do me one favor. If you do anything else from here, go check out their podcast where Jim is talking with Tyler about this most recent head coaching cycle and just his takes on some of the coaches that were hired in their introductory press conferences. I mean, it's just a chef's kiss of a podcast. I mean, I had to go back and re-listen, and it was a lot of fun. But so as we dive into this, the reason you're here tonight is because you work on a lot of philosophical angles and aspects of football. So I think you're the right person to have these sorts of conversations with, because when you look at the volatile landscape ahead of free agency, you've got a lot here on the plate. The canceled combine, quarterback chaos, you've got veterans on the verge of unemployment. There's a lot of moving parts. The first thing I want to start with as it pertains to free agency is the NFL combine cancellation. Now, in a few weeks, Jim Onis is actually going to join us on this show, the other half of your podcast, to talk.
Yes, I love it.
He's going to talk to us about the draft aspect of the cancellation of the combine and about how different the 2020 scouting cycle has been compared to what's gone on historically in the NFL, and how hard that's going to make it on some of these teams, specifically new teams who have assembled new front offices and new scouting departments in some cases. But for tonight, we're going to look at it in terms of free agency. Now, you're no stranger to the NFL Combine, right?
Oh, the NFL Combine is glorious in Indy, and for nothing that happens on the field, all that stuff is pretty boring. But it's a fun week because the whole NFL's there, and you hear a lot of shit.
Oh, of course. That's just it. I mean, what's one of your favorite experiences from all your years of attendance?
Oh, man, you know what? I wrote about it, and I talked about it a little bit on the podcast, and I don't even know if it's a favorite experience, but it's probably the most memorable experience. I'll just say it was a coach out of a pretty brutal playoff loss. Wanted to get dinner with myself and another reporter. And we're thinking it's a chance to kind of get to know each other, you know, and sit down, you know, kind of tear down that wall that exists between coaches, players, and the media. And that's what the combine can be for, to build a relationship. Lo and behold, you know, we're a couple drinks in at this Italian restaurant, a few meatballs in, and this coach just starts absolutely trashing his own players, like literally one by one, and blaming one player after another for this playoff loss that had just happened. And, you know, in the moment, I'm thinking, wow, like, this is pretty interesting. I'm getting some intel here. I mean, a lot of it was interesting. Like, we didn't know, you know, this happened because of that and that happened because of this. And he wanted us to kind of incorporate it into our coverage, because there was a lot of heat on this coach. And I came away thinking, oh, this is great. But the more I thought about it, you mature, you get wise. I mean, holy shit, this guy was just like railing against his own team. I mean, how unprofessional is that?
Like, oh, 100%.
You know, you're going to tell your team to, you know, run through a wall and stand up for each other and fight and togetherness and accountability. And you're going to do this behind their back to us. I'm pro player all the way. And that only reinforced it. That was a pretty big turning point in the way I viewed the NFL. I'll tell you that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, we've seen it. The Bill O'Briens of the world. Sometimes you see coaches who you kind of get a feeling, you're like, you have no business holding that job. And then you find out after the fact, you're like, oh, okay, I've seen it now. That's exactly what this is. And I mean, when you talk about the NFL Combine, that's just it. That's the type of stuff that goes on. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that's really juicy, and it's no secret that the Combine is a breeding ground for legalized tampering. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Legalized tampering. GMs and head coaches are there. Front office members are there. Agents are there. It's impossible that they don't end up out at a bar talking about things that might be work-related, maybe not, and there would be no way to prove it anyway. And
you see it. I mean, you literally see it at the bars. Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest things that I can point to as evidence of that is the fact that the weeks immediately following the combine are rife with free agent rumors and speculation about who's definitively going to be tagged, what teams are going to be in on what free agents. With no NFL combine to act as a vehicle for that here in 2021, I feel like I don't know. I feel like we've heard very little on that front this year. Do you think that that's – I mean, do you think that is a byproduct of some of that back channeling being cut?
I think you're absolutely nailing it. I think the fact that, you know, the whole NFL world didn't descend upon, you know, a small city like Indianapolis and everybody's going to Prime 47, Kilroy's, the JW Marriott bar – you know, the JW Starbucks, like there's the hot spots all over town. You don't have that and you're communicating via Zoom and whatnot. I think that that's why there definitely is not a lot. And, you know, to your point on just the absolute craziness that we're going to have very soon, it's going to make that craziness next level because we're not going to be tipped off. There's not going to be many warning signs. There's not going to be many rumors kind of swirling about. It's just going to happen. And, you know, the woe is me NFL cutting the salary cap down. I mean, that's a whole other debate. But I guess a lot of big name players making a lot of money are going to get cut. I mean, like the Diana Rossini report, massacre. You know, she heard it was going to be a massacre from somebody. It's like, all right, well, let's not kill these players. Let's keep them alive.
Yeah.
But it's kind of sad.
No, it is sad. And it's a big thing. And I think that not the unknown is what makes this so scary. Both as somebody who I'm sure from people who report on the NFL, from people who play in the NFL, from a fan's perspective. In fact, even from a GM's perspective, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I'm used to getting intel from these sorts of environments where I at least kind of have an idea of who I'm bidding against. I kind of have a couple weeks to put together a plan and a plan B and then maybe a plan C. Because I know who my competition is. I know what their cap space is. I've kind of figured out their needs, and I've done some poking around of my own. Everyone's flying blind now. And I feel like the next week when this kind of rolls out into the early, you know, I think because they open up that 3-day window where they can really kind of start negotiating contracts. That could be an absolute free-for-all. It could be chaos. I wouldn't want to be a person having to work the phones for 72 straight hours.
And it's going to be different. I think, you know, I remember being back in college at Syracuse and that, I mean, you remember how you'd stay up until like midnight, 1 a.m. A lot of the stuff would go down like boom right then. And it was the Albert Hainsworths of the world, yep. You know, getting overpaid. And you just wanted to see, you know, who are the Redskins going to overpay this year? What's this team going to like? Now it's kind of the reverse. I mean, we're going to see a lot of craziness, but it's going to be like the other end of the spectrum. Like, oh my God, like that player was traded or that player was cut. And it's going to be strange. I mean, I don't think we're going to be used to a week like that, where we're seeing the star players let go instead of the star players getting overpaid. And it's going to change the NFL. I mean, you're going to see a lot of guys on the move.
I mean, you want to talk about Ghostbusters, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. I woke up this morning to the news that Trent Brown, who left the Patriots to hit free agency, a Patriots team that, mind you, has a very talented rookie in Michael Owenwu currently playing on their offensive line, and has another solid player coming back in Marcus Cannon at right tackle, traded for Trent Brown. You go, wait a minute, wasn't he one of the prize acquisitions for Mike Mayock a few years ago? He was just traded back to the Patriots for peanuts. What the hell is going on around here? I feel like we have so much of that just kind of on the horizon. And it makes me feel better because I've been thinking about this for a couple weeks now. Hearing you confirm some of that as having experienced it and having kind of a feeling of what's going on. Now, in terms of some of the philosophical angles that are also going to play a role in what's coming down the pipeline in free agency here that makes this all so volatile, the quarterback carousel and the league impact from that. I mean, right now, we're talking about an unprecedented amount of player control. And that's one of the things I love about your work, like I said, is that you do an incredible job of humanizing these players and telling their stories. In just the last month, you've had some great pieces. Allen Robinson, Solomon Thomas.
Eric Wood.
Both of whom could be, I mean, both of those players could be heading to free agency this month. We found out today Allen Robinson will not be, which is kind of the crux of your piece on him. And it outlines how much more there are to these individuals. Something that the average sports fan tends to gloss over when we're talking about free agency. There's a guy there. He has a life. He has feelings. He has what he wants for his future. I mean, that dynamic, the human will, the desire, and control your own destiny instead of just being this automaton. I mean, they're not Madden players. They're people. And it seems to finally be manifesting itself in the NFL's most important position. How crazy is it to you that quarterbacks are finally flexing a little bit of muscle here?
You put it perfectly, man. And thanks for kind of like, you know, repeating the ethos of what I want GoLongDD.com to be. I mean, it's, we're going to be pro player and we're going to give these guys a voice. I don't think they like to be confined to surface level Zoom press conferences, centralized messaging from, you know, the team's PR staffs. You know, they want to be heard. Like you said, they don't want to be known as, you know, guys you plug in your fantasy football lineup or your Madden game. I mean, they make a lot of money, but guess what? When you look at other sports, I mean, this money ain't guaranteed. These contracts aren't really what they appear to be. I mean, teams are getting out of those contracts the second they can get out of those contracts. The tag, perfect example. Like, it looks like a lot of money, right? Oh my God, you know, 15, 16 mil for Allen Robinson, whatever it is. Like, that's a lot. Well, you know what? His market value, you know, for with the stats he put up, He I think he's got the second or third most receiving yards the last 2 years in the NFL. Like, and he can't get that market value contract. Yeah, that pissed me off. I mean, you've got one shot at it. You got one window to take advantage of what you can. And he isn't able to hit the market. So, yeah, definitely pro player. And it's gone to the quarterback position. I think it's great for the game. I think it's great that these guys are trying to take back a little leverage. You know what? What is interesting, though, it's like, and we kind of saw this in the CBA negotiations. There's kind of two NFLs, I feel like, when it comes to the players. You know, these star players, and I'm with them. Like, you know, Deshaun Watson feels lied to. He feels like that was a bait and switch. They told him, look, you're going to have a voice when we make big-time franchise decisions. And then they didn't even really listen to him. It's ownership, but it's at the very top. So it's not even about money with him. He's going to be willing to sit out and lose money. Book it, like that, he'll do it. Mm-hmm. But there's that side of it, and then there's those guys, you know, making minimum level contracts that they don't care about the franchise tag. That's why this stuff constantly is passed through the CBAs, right? Like, that's the retort. Well, why did you sign off on the CBA if you don't like the franchise tag? Well, it's just the stars that are unhappy about it. These guys, you know, 53 players on a team, they want to play. They want a job, and I get that too.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, I've heard both sides of this argument. I mean, there's one and a half of people who say that it's bad for the game and that it's players not honoring their contracts, which cheapen the value of them and make them appear to have been negotiated in bad faith, which somebody actually used the term bad faith talking to me about it. I'm talking about just in the office at work. And I was like, do I laugh at you? Maybe throw water in your face? Like, I don't know what to do because it's so far off base. Like, if anybody here is negotiating in bad faith, That's the problem with the franchise tag, is that too often these teams are using it in bad faith. I've also heard the other side of the argument, that it's good for the game because it serves as a warning to crappy owners, crappy front offices, and bad coaching staffs, that they need to make sure that they're doing everything they can to either be good, competitive, or at least accountable up to the highest levels, because ineptitude on those fronts isn't going to be as accepted as it used to be by these players. Which you're seeing with the Deshaun Watson situation. He went to the owners and said, look, I don't think you people know what you're doing. I want to be a part of the decision-making here. And they said, yeah, sure, of course. And then they went and made a whole bunch of decisions behind his back. None of them on their face seemed like they were smart decisions. I mean, David Culley, great. David Culley, former Buffalo Bills wide receiver coach.
Quarterbacks coach. He never coached quarterbacks before.
Is that what it is?
That's how bad it was, you know? Okay. We assume it's receivers because that's all he had done.
Oh, no, but you know what it was? You know where I got wide receivers from? He was the wide receivers coach who oversaw the Chiefs who went like 12 weeks with no wide receiver touchdowns. And you go, wait a minute. What are we talking about here? Who is this? I'm sure as a quarterback, I would be incensed. I mean, I agree with all of this because I've experienced it in my own life professionally. Yeah. We talked about it. I kind of eschewed journalism to work in finance. And I was working for a company whose gross incompetence from ownership to middle management on down led to us hemorrhaging hundreds of thousands of dollars annually. That as the lead of the AR team, they were asking me to oversee the collection of, and in an effort to, because that's what you do in that position, is you protect the company's investments. You protect their cash. But if you have the owner coming to you when you point out, hey, just because of the ineptitude of your company, it's taken me 4 months to put this whole report together, but you've hemorrhaged almost $750,000 this year. And here's where it is. And the owner looks at you and goes, well, I don't know. That seems like you should be talking to so-and-so in accounting about that. What? All right. I literally walked out of a meeting, took that folder, I threw it down the hallway and went to my desk. I was like, you know what? If you don't care, I don't care. I don't want to be here anymore. And I immediately found a better job. That's what these players are doing now. You've got the Deshaun Watsons of the world who have just watched their owner tell them, that seems like you should be talking to somebody else about wanting a good head coach. I don't know. We found a guy. He's got a pulse. Yeah, fuck it. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out. And if you're not going to let me walk, then I'm going to become a problem. And that's where this is headed. But I like it. Now, the question is, what is the impact on free agency? I mean, it's bound to have one, right? I mean, the teams pursuing trades now, do you believe that they might slow play the signing of other free agents due to the cap constraints of landing one of these premier quarterbacks? I mean, when you look at all the names on the move, Wilson with a $32 million cap hit, Watson with a $15 million, Garoppolo is $26.4 million, Darnold, $9 million, which isn't chump change. Do you believe that their cap hits, just by virtue of being a quarterback that's that highly paid, could have ripple effects into the free agency market?
No doubt. I love your analogy there, by the way. It's so true. You know, it's like you just nailed it. I'm sure that's what Deshaun Watson's thinking, knowing people in his inner circle. Like, he is you throwing the papers all over the place. You know, it's like, you know, I've got friends who can't watch The Office, you know, because Michael Scott it hits too close to home. Like, they have bosses like that. It's like, I cannot watch this. It's like, I get out of work, I cannot be around that kind of boss more often. So I think that absolutely is happening in Houston. And to answer your question, I think that you will see a ripple effect. It's going to start with the quarterbacks. I think, like, if you're a competent franchise, which, you know, there's some that aren't. I mean, what are the Chicago Bears doing? I don't know what their plan is. I mean, I think the GM and the coach are probably still like, holy crap, thank God we beat the Jaguars and God, whoever else they beat at the end of the year, Houston, to keep their jobs and snuck into the playoffs. Like, who's the quarterback? You know, who do you got at the receiver position? Allen Robinson. I'm telling you what, he's not going to want to play in that franchise tag. But it's going to start there with the quarterback. And I think it's going to start with relationships. You know, I don't really necessarily have all the cap hit numbers here and, you know, crunch it. Okay, this guy could go there because they've got some room, or this guy could go there because they got some room. I think, you know, if you believe in a quarterback, you're going to find a way to make it work. Carson Wentz, Frank Reich, Indianapolis, like, they're willing to take that contract on. They're willing to part with some draft capital because they think that, you know, the 2017 version of Carson Wentz is in there somewhere, and they can kind of bring that to the surface again. So, you know, what are those connections? Obviously, Jimmy Garoppolo, New England. You know, they drafted him. That was going to be their guy. They are a parent to Tom Brady. Now, Brady had a say. He said, no, I'm going to keep playing. I'm going to keep playing really well. That's something that absolutely could happen one way or another. Trade, cut, this. I don't know. I'm just right now, I'm kind of trying to find those relationships that work and then work around that. So, you know, who is it in Chicago? Beats me. I mean, it's also a game of musical chairs, right? Like, you know, the music's playing and at some point, you know, it's going to stop and you're going to be stuck with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Kyle Trask combination. You know,
well, exactly.
That's cheap. And what's that?
No, that's exactly it, is that at some point these teams are going to have to decide who's going to play quarterback for them.
Yeah.
And so knowing that these things are all in play, I mean, it's fun to write about when you're a journalist, and it makes for great headlines when you're talking about, oh, all these quarterbacks could be on the move. The reality is you have to orchestrate that quickly if you're going to have a plan for what your football team is and the money that you're going to spend and how you're going to allocate it, what this quarterback's strengths are, and what kind of players he needs around him in order to thrive. You're going to have to figure all that out, and you're going to have to figure it out quickly. And you're trying to hit a moving target at this point, and you don't have – you have a very finite amount of time to do it.
And the quarterback has to want to go to you too.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that's a huge factor. Watson has a no-trade clause in his contract. So when he signed that massive extension, he was smart enough to be like, okay, you know what? I have trust, but just that little part in the back of my brain that says – you know, there, I could get to this point. I think that he probably could have got 2 more years on that contract too, and he didn't want 2 more years because, okay, I think that, you know, he even telling? Then saw some red flags. Obviously, they made the trade for David Johnson by then too. So I think the fact, you know, quarterbacks, they'll have a little bit of a say on where they want to go too, with that player empowerment stuff we're talking about.
No, and that's just it. And now it's funny you mention that he has the no trade clause. I've seen the Jets content creators constantly churning out, like, well, if we could just get Watson, if we can get Watson. I've talked to Patriots fans. You know, we do an AFC East-centric podcast aside from our Bills podcast where we talk to all of these guys. And we've heard each of them parrot, if we could get Watson, if. Well, the question is, even if you could make a trade package that the team would accept, he has to want to go there. And that's, again, part of this player control that I think you're seeing quarterbacks. And that's where it starts. It always starts with quarterbacks, and then it trickles down from there. That's where they're starting to have this fight. And quarterbacks are winning. Quarterbacks are getting no trade clauses. We saw it this week with Dak Prescott. He signs his contract. It's not only a market-setting contract, but he gets a no trade clause and a no tag clause. Mm-hmm. Now, how... is that, I mean, I feel like this is kind of the fruit of what Watson's going through. Watson's showing everybody, hey, look, you can do this. You can, you're going to suffer a little bit. I'm sure it's not going to be comfortable. But if we together push and say, look, we're not going to be told you can't have a no trade clause. We're not going to be told that we want to tag you if you want to. No, we're not going to let that happen anymore. And as quarterbacks start drawing the line in the sand, I think more quarterbacks and then hopefully more players are going to start doing the same. I mean, do you see that dynamic playing out that way?
Yes, no doubt. I think the court of public opinion is strong too. I don't know. I don't really have the metrics to point to on this. Maybe it's always dangerous to use Twitter as a gauge. I mean, I feel like right now, by and large, you know, the court of public opinion is kind of shifting a little bit toward the players. I think, you know, there's still a lot of fans out there that, you know, stand by their teams and say, oh, my God, he doesn't deserve that money, or, you know, shut up and play. And but I feel like by and large, if people see how bad it is in Houston. They saw the DeAndre Hopkins trade. They see the David Culley hire. They see the abomination that is that defense. They see all of this.
They heard that Jack Easterby was somehow allowed to circumvent. The team paid $1 million for a coach search, and then some guy who just has this weird, undefined role with the team shows up at the owner's house in the middle of the night and talks him into hiring a coach, hiring a GM. Talks him into hiring a GM despite every other bit of advice given to him by a service they paid for. That sounds like a disaster. That sounds like a nightmare. That sounds like something that you'd read about in a book, in a fiction novel. I mean, that. And yet here we are talking about it in the NFL. So this is kind of their way of saying, look, I mean, and we as fans, to your point, have become insensitive enough to this stuff that we're not willing to just overlook it anymore. And so the court of public opinion maybe has swung in their favor in that regard.
100%.
One of the craziest things, though, is that this quarterback movement trend.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Sorry, my screen just froze up a little bit there. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. No, we were talking about quarterback movement. And the thing I was going to say was, oddity or new normal? here's what got my mind churning this direction. I was reading Pro Football Talk leading up to this conversation, and I came across an article that kind of underscored that while all the quarterback volatility we're seeing this offseason is going to have an impact on the market, there's more of it on the horizon than people really are thinking about here in the short term. A large part of the chaos we've seen over the last few years and ramping up into this season has been spurred by the old guard at quarterback moving on, declining in talent, or aging out of the NFL. Meanwhile, you have teams that have really struggled to backfill those quarterbacks that left with anything comparable. So I dug into that a little bit because I have a sickness for this. Chris, you'll be happy to know I didn't make a chart.
Thank you.
I make charts because data analysis is a thing, and I waterboard him with them.
You waterboard our audience with charts.
Over 50 people had me email them that defensive end statistic chart, and they loved it.
Yeah, but it would have been better if you tweeted out that photo I made with you
because I'm shirtless
and our rock pile research template.
I'm going to tweet it out this week just to remind everybody it exists, Chris, because of your hard work.
Yeah.
Pat yourself on the back.
But I'll take that chart. You can send it this way.
I will send it over to you, sir, but I'll tell you what. I'll send you the non-shirtless version. But
yeah,
you
know, please.
I believe in metrics. I'm a nerd when it comes to that stuff. It's part of what I do. Data analysis, trend analysis, things like that. But so when I start digging into these numbers and I'm looking at this and I'm hearing like, okay, well, there's all this quarterback chaos on the horizon. And we don't have there's not a lot of teams with future at the quarterback position. You look at the history, looking backwards, you had a run of 10 straight Super Bowls where Big Ben, Manning, and Brady were the AFC's representative. The epic late 90s, early 2000s classes are on their last legs. Manning's retired. Eli and Rivers retired this over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. Drew Brees is tiptoeing all over that line. You can talk to me about what you think Ben Roethlisberger's usefulness is at this point or what his ceiling is as far as an NFL quarterback. It's questionable. Rodgers is still playing at a high level, but his team just spent a first-round pick on a quarterback. And Tom Brady is still balling out because he's fucking Tom Brady, and that's just what he's going to do until the day he actually gets struck by lightning because I just feel like that's what he deserves. But having said that, you take a look around and there's a real drought of talent, it feels like, because then you take that and you look at what happened after 2005. After that late 90s and early 2000s clusters of quarterback, the Mannings, the Bradys, the Rodgers, and the Big Bens, the draft has been a wasteland of them. There's been no real generational quarterback talent cultivated over the last 15-ish years. And I don't know if that's an indictment of the NFL draft prognosticators, the lack of high-quality GMing, maybe college teams or college systems just don't work when you're paired up against NFL-caliber defenses. I don't know. But here's the numbers. From 2006 to 2017, 8 Super Bowl appearances by the quarterbacks drafted in that time span. And only 3 Super Bowl wins. Over 15 years, only 3 of those quarterbacks won a Super Bowl. 12 quarterbacks who saw contract extensions by the team that drafted them. And of that group, you can't count Bortles or Watson. Watson's forcing his way off the team. Bortles, that contract was a dog the second that they inked it. And then you've got Matt Ryan, Cam Newton, and Andy Dalton, who are all nearing the end of their careers and are kind of just becoming these journeymen waiting for a place to happen. How crazy is that when you think about 15 years without any, I mean, leading up to Patrick Mahomes, any real star quarterbacks coming out?
That's fascinating. You know, I think that there's a couple ways to look at it. Like, you know, it's definitely a trickle up league now. You know, all those quarterbacks that you mentioned at the top there, you know, Roethlisberger, Eli, Peyton, you know, Brady's Brady, I guess. But like, you know, that, you know, Rodgers, it was very, you know, the NFL is dictating the style of play. It's very in the pocket, reading the defense, breaking it down. You know, move a little bit. You don't really need to move a lot. And now obviously it's college to the NFL. I mean, look at what Greg Roman's doing in Baltimore. I mean, they're totally taking advantage of what Lamar Jackson's skill set is. Andy Reid did the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. You're going to have Jim Monas on. Ask him about this. I mean, when they were scouting Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, that was their trepidation there with both guys, is we're going to have to completely change our offense for both of these guys. Now, there's teams and coaches and front offices that are willing to do that, and it works out. And in retrospect, Jim is the first to tell you, shit, we should have done that. And there are a lot of teams that don't. So I did think overall, looking at the quarterback position, that's kind of where the NFL is. Like, you just take whoever's freaking good in college and make it work. If you got to tear up your playbook to make it happen, do it. So where does that leave, the statistics that you just kind of laid out there? Yeah, I mean, maybe the quarterback position isn't as strong as we all kind of think it is, looking at that star power. I mean, I love Watson. I love Mahomes. I love all these guys. But, like, the collective, maybe it's not as strong because it is a trickle-up kind of thing now. I don't know. I guess I haven't looked at it close enough. Watching these guys. They're fun. But it is different.
What you got is a lot of guys like Jared Goff, who are maybe they're good in the right system, but you're kind of an average starter with a good team. And then you've got some dogs, which everybody, you're going to have that. You've got some rookies every year. You've got some inexperienced guys who are trying to gain experience to hopefully prove they're like the Drew Locks of the world. You've got guys like Drew Lock who are trying to prove that they can be good. You've got every year there's a team that drafts, what's the kid's name out of Washington, who they took in the first round out of Ohio State. It's not coming to me now, but they take this kid and he lasts for a season.
Oh, Dwayne Haskins.
Haskins. This is what I'm talking about. Like, it's becoming harder and harder to hit on that. Now you throw in the fact that even if you do hit on it, these quarterbacks, they're willing to throw their muscle around. And they're willing to say, look, I know you're bad. Hey, you hit on me. I'm Deshaun Watson, and you did one of the things that 28 other teams this year won't find a way to do, which is find a good quarterback in the draft. But if you screw this up, I will force my way off this football team. That's a dynamic that we haven't seen, and it's interesting in how that's going to change the way football gets played going forward, because when you look ahead 4 years from now, there's only a handful of teams that really have any stability on that front. Dak Prescott with Dallas, that contract guarantees he'll be there. The Chargers with Justin Herbert. Patrick Mahomes with KC. Kyler Murray in Arizona, who is the only team in the NFC that fits this metric. Cincinnati with Joe Burrow, depending on how his ACL turns out. Baltimore is kind of a wild card with Lamar Jackson and his valuation of what he's worth versus what the franchise thinks he's worth. Apparently, there's a big gap there. So that'll be interesting to watch, but they probably find a way to get a deal done. And Buffalo with Josh Allen. Everybody else either has a stopgap right now or has a below what I would call like a quarterback who could get you to your conference's championship, which is ultimately why we're here. So if you don't think, hey, my quarterback, he's okay, he'll put butts in the seats, but he's not going to get us anywhere, then you're nowhere. And in a couple of years, you're going to be redoing it. What does that do in your mind to the competitive balance of the NFL?
Yeah, look at the league right now. How many teams, and like we just said, it's going to be chaos next week. But like right now, how many teams are like legitimate Super Bowl contenders? Like this team, absolutely, no doubt about it, could win it. I don't know what, like 5, 6. It's not a lot. Like it's going to get kind of top heavy. You know, they've got this salary cap and it's in place to try to prevent that. But the more these quarterbacks kind of take control, I mean, look at Tom Brady and Tampa Bay. Like before he got there, Jameis Winston was a bust who threw 30 interceptions, and boom, you swap him out. You bring Tom Brady in. Gronk wants to play there. Leonard Fournette wants to play there. Antonio Brown wants to play there. Like, and you're going to see this offseason. A ton of guys are going to take cheap contracts to play with Tom Brady. A ton of guys are going to take cheap contracts to play with Patrick Mahomes. Those top quarterbacks that have that control are going to go where they want to go. And they're going to bring on, guys later in their career that don't necessarily need to take the shitty contract to play with the Lions. And yeah, it's going to hurt the competitive balance. And we might see that kind of play out here as, Mahomes takes off. And that's what's make that. And I know we keep coming back to Watson guys, but like, that's what makes this situation so wild. How do you screw that up? You have one of these guys. And now you know, it's not just, and he's the most unselfish dude you'll talk to in the league. I've sat down with him. It's genuine. It's real. I mean, we talked about Jack Easterby a couple of years ago, and he only had great things to say about him. And I asked somebody in Watson's inner circle yesterday, I'm like, dude, what the hell happened? Like, the last time I talked to Watson, you know, he seemed to like Easterby a lot. He said they talked a lot. He goes, well, you know, it's hard to get Deshaun to say something bad about anybody ever. So,
and that's, like,
you have this dude, and now he's unhappy. That's on you. If he's unhappy, that's on you, Houston.
Exactly.
Not on him.
You found a way to make this guy who seems to like everybody unhappy. Now, we have a quarterback much in the same vein. And I guess that's where, to steer this back to a little bit of Bills talk before we move on to the final point here, or final category that we're going to talk about. How big was Josh Allen's 2020 season in regards to this dynamic where you're talking about being a team where players will, because you're a contender and because there's such a lopsided competitive balance based on the way quarterback trends have gone, how important was that in terms of the Bills maybe being able to harness a little bit of that? Hey, I'll take a chance. I mean, we saw it today. Mitch Morse took a pay cut to stay with the Bills rather than go chase a paycheck because he believes in what we're doing here. How important was Josh Allen's season last year to that dynamic?
Yeah, when in the hell did that happen in Buffalo? You can picture Mario Williams sitting there with the helmet, you know, $100 million contract, talking about hunting deers. Didn't he say deer? He did plural, deers in Buffalo. Yes. It's like, you know, they would trot out these overpaid free agent signings. Yeah, well, back to that. I remember Derek Dockery and Langston Walker. That was a big thing with Marv.
God, you're going to hurt my liver, sir. We just talked about this last week. We really try not to invoke those two names on this podcast because...
Who else can we think of here? I mean, obviously, T.O. is a shoe in there. But you know, that was the thing. Like, this time of year in Buffalo, it was, oh my gosh, who can we overpay? You know, if this is the Bills talking. Who can we overpay to come here? And that's a win as a franchise. Now it's, you don't have to think like that if you're the Bills. You don't have to talk like that if you're the Bills. You're in a position, because of Josh Allen, to your point, to dictate the terms a little bit, which isn't easy to do when, you know, we're looking out our window and we're seeing that 3 feet of snow in Boston, New York finally melting. You know, it's not easy to get guys to play in Buffalo, much like Green Bay. But if you have the quarterback, you know, Green Bay had Brett Favre, they moved to Aaron Rodgers, they can entice people to play there. The Bills have Josh Allen. They can entice people to play there. He's young. They're competitive. They have a foundation. It's pretty unbelievable. And I remember when I launched Go Long, that was our big two-part series we kind of started with, because at that time, you know, there was a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. And nobody really knew where this was going to go. He finished that regular season strong. That Pittsburgh game, to me, was such a moment for him. That second half, you know, they're blitzing him like crazy. He's standing there. He's reading stuff. He's delivering. I think he really won over the front office that day. I think if there was a moment that you can point to and say that is when they decided to give Josh Allen big-time quarterback money, it was that game. Now, the playoffs didn't go that great, you know, AFC championship game. But I think, you know, he's the guy. I think you're going to pay him. And to your point, yeah, they can bring in other players. They can get guys to take pay cuts. They can do this kind of stuff because – you've got the quarterback. And as you said, only, you know, you can count on one hand how many teams are in that position.
It really is incredible. And that dynamic is going to come in handy because, as we heard at the top of the show and as we've kind of alluded to in spots throughout this podcast, there is a purge coming. I mean, the final thing playing out right now that could maybe have the biggest impact for both the NFL and for the Buffalo Bills is the... I guess it's been proclaimed as a massacre that's about to take place across the NFL to highly paid and older mid-level veterans. I'm going to pour a little bourbon over ice.
I like it.
You know, because hey, you got to pour one out for the homies, right? You got to pour one out for these poor guys who are going to lose their jobs here in the next coming days. Diana Rossini's tweet set the world on fire and started a lot of conversations, and then more quotes started coming out, more anonymous GMs started making their feelings known. And before you know it, what you're left with is this view of free agency where you're saying, hey, we as the podcast community, we as the blog community, all the work that we've done to try to gauge various markets, all of that could be crap. You might as well tear it up and set it on fire now, because that's not what the market's actually going to look like, which is hilarious to me. I mean, how frustrating is that for you, someone who worked in that realm professionally?
It is going to be interesting. I don't really know what to expect. I mean, like what players are going to get traded? What players are going to get cut? And how does that kind of shake it up? You know, you hear Stephon Gilmore's name kind of getting floated around. He was the defensive player of the year just a couple years ago. You know, it's crazy. We'll see what happens in New England. But, yeah, it does make it frustrating, I guess. But to me, it kind of makes it fun is kind of a morbid word to use when people are, you know, getting cut. But it makes it fun to see just players on the move, things getting shaken up, things changing in terms of the entertainment value, because these teams are going to look different. Quarterbacks are going to be playing for new teams. And in this league where we can only point to, you know, six teams that could realistically win a Super Bowl, it at least shakes it up to a point where you can convince yourself, okay, maybe this team can make a run because now they've got this player.
Oh, of course. I mean, we talked about it in a podcast with Ryan Talbot from New York Upstate. We were talking about how kind of like the offensive line to, you know, in our show tomorrow, what we're going to talk about with Matt Parrino is how the offensive line, Brandon Bean has really stayed away from drafting talent. He seems to want to go into free agency and find established guys that he knows, or at least he thinks he knows, can play the position. The Bills have treated cornerback two the same way. And so a week or two ago when we did our show with Ryan Talbot, we were talking about how, oh, the cornerback market, it's old, overpaid, there's not a lot out there. But you factor in the dynamic of guys who want to take a contract just to try to go compete for a Super Bowl, established guys who've already gotten their money. Malcolm Butler just got cut before we started recording this podcast. Like, that happened. Now he's out there on the free agent market. There's going to be more of this in the coming days. And as more guys like the Richard Shermans, the Malcolm Butlers, the AJ Bouyers, all of a sudden you're looking at it and you're going, well, I used to think it was smart for the Bills to use their 30th pick on a cornerback, but if we could get a guy like that who's willing to come in here and just try to go get a ring, you have to chase that. Yeah. You have to at least kick the tires, see what's out there, right?
That's the Bills are in a good position. Thinking of the game through that lens, because like, yeah, they are in a position of leverage to point to their roster and their quarterback and their competitiveness and can play there. Like, for, you know, a couple million less than maybe he could get somewhere else. And then it's up to the player. Okay, do I want to play for, pick on the Lions again, the Bengals, you know, the Vikings, one of these teams, or, you know, I'm 31, 32 years old. Do I want to chase a ring? I've got a lot of money. Do I want to have a fun year of actually competing for a Super Bowl? Yeah, like it's going to be an exciting time for the Bills. No doubt about it. I mean, it's a difficult time. I mean, they've got to make some pretty prudent decisions here because you are going to give Allen that contract. And guess what? Stephon Diggs, I know he's got 3 years left on his contract. I got to think if he hasn't done it already, you know, his representation's going to Brandon Bean and they're asking for a raise. And at first I thought, well, that's not the precedent you want to set in your locker room. And then you go back and you see the season that Stephon Diggs had. And it's like, all right, if we got one good thing going as a team, it's Allen, it's Diggs, have whatever the hell you want and work around that, you know? So we'll see how that shakes out. But all right, you get that done. You factor that into your, you know, your planning up in your brain, and then you can get some of these other guys below market value. You know, to me, being a pro player guy, it stinks. You know, I don't like it, but hey, if you're the Bills, you love that factor.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, in my mind, there's three factors that are going to contribute to creating advantageous market conditions for Buffalo. First of all, a current market that's full of players who need maybe one or two seasons to revamp and rehab their image. You know, there's some guys, I mean, we talked about Nick Morrow, the linebacker out of Oakland, who, when you look at his numbers, he had the third best coverage grade for any weak side linebacker in a 4-3 defense in the NFL. And yet, because he plays for the infamous John Gruden, you know, obviously he's a great coach. He was totally worth the $10 million that they paid him.
What a disaster. Oh my God.
He somehow, they brought in Nick Kwiatkowski and Corey Littleton and just completely marginalized this kid who's missed tackle percentage dropped significantly from his last year, which it's declined every year. He's been great against the run. Now his coverage grade is in the upper echelon of football, and yet they found a way to bench him every opportunity they could. It's just like, okay, he even went on record. I mean, you being a pro player guy can respect this. He went on record and said that he and his agent are painfully aware that on most, like, PFF, NFLRumors.com, whatever have you, his name doesn't even show up in the top 100. He's not being talked about. And his agent's finding some lukewarm reception to him out there in the market. But he's like, look, I'm a three-down linebacker in the NFL. There's a lot of guys like Nick Morrow out there who just need a chance, who need to say, hey, look, you want to sign here on a one-year deal to rehab? Because Sean McDermott at the Combine last year said, you come to Buffalo to become the best version of yourself. And they've shown that. Guys like Matt Milano, who were a fifth-round draft pick, who's now going to sign one of the richest linebacker contracts in recent history. Darrell Williams, a player off the scrap heap who was marginalized by his old team and injury. Now he gets the chance to go out there and get the contract that he should have gotten after his all-pro season. He just wasn't eligible for it. These guys are cashing in because of the culture and the fit and the staff that we've put together here. We're going to be able to sell that to players like the Nick Morrows of the world. And that makes us attractive. There's also the rising volume of players available. Veteran players just looking for a landing pad. Just looking for somewhere to go to work. Then there's also the following cap, but the promise of money a couple years down the road. Brandon Bean's proven to be pretty, we call him a contractual gangster. We actually have some like mafioso music we play in the background. We make a whole Godfather thing out of it. It's funny, but it's true in that Brandon Bean is very shrewd when it comes to negotiating his contracts. Those three things, you have to agree with me that they are going to bear fruit here this offseason for the Buffalo Bills.
And they should probably cut bait in a few spots too, on some of these vets on defense. I'd just be shooting from the hip, but
Vernon Butler,
Curtin Jefferson.
He's redundant the second star comes back into the building. Like, I don't know what
Mario Addison. If I'm the Bills, these are guys that some better than others, but and I'm looking back at the Chiefs, I'm looking back at that AFC Championship game, and I'm seeing, all right, what is the difference here? You need a dude who can get after Patrick Mahomes, who can just get him running for 500 yards like the Bucs did that night. They don't have those players. So, it's got to start there. And, yeah, they are in a position to convince guys to play in Buffalo. That's a good place to be. But I'll just say this, though. Who are you convincing? You might be able to get some of these guys on some cheapish contracts, but you need a stud, and the studs won't come cheap. Now, I feel like, even with the salary cap the way it is, good players getting cut all over. I could be wrong. I can't see the Bills going to the Super Bowl next year unless they add like an absolute dude of a pass. And look, Shaq Barrett's available now, it appears. They didn't tag him. He's going to want a ton of money. Unique Ngakoue is right there. I think Bud Dupree was tagged. We'll see how that shakes out. But there's not a lot. It's you can count those on one hand too. But I think they got to make a run at one of these guys because they haven't proven that they can draft the D line that well. If there is a sore spot with this front office, Ed Oliver, he ain't shown much. AJ Epinesa, I know it's early, didn't show much. Harrison Phillips, there's not much going on up there.
This is exactly what we were talking about, is how Bean has tried to fill those positions with veterans. And I get why. Probably because he recognizes that as a weakness in his ability to cultivate, or maybe that's it. It's just, look, we've tried drafting and it doesn't work, but we need to win now. Which means I have to go spend money at these places because my staff, my whatever it is, we've whiffed a couple times. We're not getting what we need from this. I will say that the market influence of these cuts does fall in Buffalo's favor. And I'm glad you're talking about the offensive line because that's kind of the final point here tonight. They're good for anybody who fancies themselves a buyer. But if you dig deeper, there's some things going on that I think are going to be advantageous for Buffalo specifically. First of all, the offensive line. Interior and the right tackle position. At the onset of the offseason, John Feliciano publicly stated, I think it was an interview, I can't remember where he did it. Chris, if you know, stop me. Where he just was very comfortable in stating that he felt that a deal with Buffalo was a foregone conclusion. And while people here love the sandpaper and the grit and the toughness that Feliciano brings to the game, Spotrac has his value pegged at like $8.1 million per year. But when you look at how dramatically the free agent landscape is going to change between now and Wednesday, when teams can start signing, you've got Kevin Zeitler, who's on the trade block right now in New York and could be cut, just like James Carpenter out of Atlanta.
Roll Tide!
Yeah, take that. He's an Auburn fan, so I take every opportunity to just embrace any Alabama player I can.
My brother went to Auburn. I just follow Auburn.
And he just yells War Eagle occasionally when they lose, which isn't often, thank God for me. The Jags' Andrew Norwell. Okay, the Jaguars' franchise tag Cam Robinson, which means Norwell's going, if he can't be traded, he's going to get cut.
49ers, Doug Marone special there.
Exactly. 49ers' Weston Richburg. He's a center guard who's going to pique some teams' interest because it's the word on the street is he's going to be out too. Trey Turner, a player that the Chargers just traded for. They traded Russell Okung, who I think is also a free agent. He's going to be out there too. Gabe Jackson and Richie Incognito were both released. Now, Incognito, hilarious. Because I saw Bills fans going, hey, why don't we bring back Richie? And I'm like, are you crazy? First of all, let's just see if we can forget about the fact that he tried to cut his dead father's head off. That's public record. I can't be sued for this. We're talking about it. He threw weights at people at a public gym, and the cops had to be called. And his last interactions with our GM in front office probably didn't leave a good taste in everybody's mouth. So I feel like he's never setting foot in Buffalo ever again, unless it's in another team's uniform. But Gabe Jackson, he's a veteran, and he's interesting because he's kind of a mauler. He's one of the guys you're talking about. When you want to talk about a powerful road-grading guard, Gabe Jackson's your guy. I really do think that there's a lot out there. And what that means to me is that when people who talk about John Feliciano, if you like Feliciano and you as the Bills think, hey, Feliciano can be part of, I mean, a rushing attack got better when Feliciano came back. If you think you can go win a Super Bowl with that guy at guard, maybe he'll come back on a cheaper contract because the market's about to be flooded with guys who are more talented than him. And there's going to be some of that at the tackle position. I mean, what do you think of that dynamic?
Yeah, those are a lot of big names. I mean, there's going to be a lot of movement. And you got to figure out like which of these guys have something to give. I mean, hey, I'm all about Richie Incognito. He was my guy in Buffalo. There was a magnetic pull in that locker room to talk to Richie. I think he nailed it, though. I think that bridge probably has been burnt for a few different reasons in Buffalo. Can't see a reunion in the works. Turner, you know, he's a mauler. He's got a mean streak. I actually just talked to him today. Well, the Q&A up at some point, but... hoping to get him on one of our Zoom happy hours too. Just a riot. I mean, he's.
Why don't you explain that? Hang on. Total sidebar. Explain to our listeners what a Zoom happy hour is.
Oh, thank you. Every Friday night, sometimes Saturday night, we got to change up the schedule. Subscribers to golongtd.com, and if you subscribe right now, you get a free hoodie or crew sweatshirt. Annual subscription, so they're pretty sharp. I'm wearing one right now. But I think that's one of the big perks when you subscribe to my newsletters. Yeah, you get all the articles, free features, profiles, Q&As, analysis, all that. But the Zoom happy hours, we just get a player, get a coach, get somebody in the game on, and we just throw back beers, drink a choice, and talk football for an hour. It's kind of like what we're doing now, but we had Allen Robinson on after I wrote that story. Joshua Harris, who's Lamar Jackson's personal quarterbacks coach, was on last Friday. It was just phenomenal talking about Lamar. Steve Tasker came on. Ryan Leaf came on. Doug Whaley. And now that the draft's getting closer, I'm hoping to get draft prospects on every Friday. So starting this Friday. So it's a riot. I think it's worth a couple of cups of coffee a month just for that. But of course, I'm biased.
No, trust me, there's value in that. But so as you were saying, you're talking about this, and we're talking about just offensive linemen and the people who are going to be available and how that works for Buffalo.
Yeah. I think that if you're Buffalo, I don't know if it's necessarily the personnel. I don't know. You know, personnel-wise, I don't think they're really that bad in a few spots. You want to see more out of Cody Ford. That's a high pick. That's a second round pick. You know, when he gets healthy, you need him to pan out, whether it's guard, tackle, wherever he's playing. But I think it has more to do with just the style of play. Like, I think that they probably can run the ball with what they have. It's just like, you know, they didn't run the ball once in that first half against Baltimore, right? Maybe one time. They didn't do it. Like, I think it's a matter of knowing when to do it. I mean, maybe that Kansas City game, you try to run the ball a little bit when it looks like this shootout's going to get out of hand. You know, I don't know. I don't know when you do it, how you do it, but it's more so, I think, about that commitment from the sideline, maybe, or from the booth with Brian Daboll. I you know, this is still a team, though, that's going to throw the ball all over the place. I wouldn't go out and invest in one of these guys. I wouldn't try to turn yourself into this run-heavy team. Maybe a draft that Travis Etienne, because he can catch the ball. I mean, they could use a weapon like that. But in terms of mauling offensive linemen, in terms of a new running back, in terms of just going that route, I think it's more so knowing when to run than it is just completely changing your identity at this point. Third team with Josh Allen. It's going to throw the ball all over the place. Lean into that. Keep adding weapons. You know, maybe you can find a way to restructure John Brown to keep him around, but just keep those weapons in place as long as you possibly can. And yeah, just run the ball here and there when you're able.
I mean, that's the thing, is this team isn't that far away. And as some of these players mature and grow, you sprinkle in enough pieces. Maybe you get a high-end pass rusher because you don't have one right now. And I feel like every Super Bowl team needs one, right? We've never seen a team win a Super Bowl that didn't have at least one guy who could really get after it.
That's what they need, no doubt.
And then you look at the offensive line, to your point, you running backs, people pounding the table, hey, we have to draft Najee Harris or I'm not watching in 2021. First of all, you're liars. You're all liars. I know who you are, too, because I see you on Twitter, and I'm petty, so I take names. we are the pettiest, hardest-drinking Bills podcast. That's our brand. That's what we've cultivated here. I'm taking names, and I know that you'll be watching when the Bills don't draft a running back at 30. But I guess the thing is, we don't need monumental overhaul of the offense just because our last game ended so poorly.
Yeah,
it's totally more philosophical, and it's, hey, we go out there and we change a couple pieces and maybe we have the talent to get over that hump. And maybe our coaching staff needed this as kind of my father called them 2x4 lessons. He goes, some things in life you're going to learn easy. Sometimes you have to take one in the teeth, pick yourself up because you just got hit in the face with a 2x4 and you're going to learn more from that than anything else. And I feel like Sean McDermott has done really well in taking those moments and embracing them and turning them into success, just like Josh Allen has. I mean, that almost seems to be a theme with this team. So I'm really interested to see how they can do with what they can do with what they have in limited cap space and how big of a lift they think this team really needs. Now, what will you be watching for when free agency starts? I mean, for the Buffalo Bills specifically, you've touched on some of it as far as where you think they should go. What storylines, though, league-wide, are you going to be most closely following?
Definitely the quarterbacks. And, you know, New England is fascinating to me. Like, who's going to be their quarterback? I don't know. Like, is it Jimmy Garoppolo some way, somehow? It's not Cam Newton. I mean, those passing numbers, you're talking 1940s stuff there. They got to move on. But, you know, that's a really interesting team. And we all assume that Bill Belichick is playing chess when everybody's playing checkers. But here we are. We're hearing Matt Stafford would play for any team but the Patriots.
And it actually warmed my cold black heart a little bit. I was just like, oh, this is the best.
I'll say this, too. I mean, just to throw another go-along tease out there, I was just down in Florida for the week hanging out with players. Talked with or met up with one player. It said he had quite a story about the Patriots. He spent his rookie season with the Patriots and just completely lost his love of football because of the culture that's there. So that was pretty fascinating to hear. I don't know. That team is really interesting to me, what they do at quarterback. Being here in Buffalo, New York, though, like, just to bring it back to the Bills, man, it is going to be – I think this is probably the most important offseason they've had in our lifetime, because this is a team that can win the Super Bowl. This is a team without a lot of money to spend. Every single decision that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott make, it has to be prudent. It has to be correct, because it can go one way or the other here. Like, you have less leeway when you do pay Josh Allen, and they're going to pay him, so they got to think that way right now. You got to draft better. Their drafts have kind of been iffy around the quarterback. So you got to start hitting on those third and fourth round picks. You got to get guys who can play right away. A lot of the players that you've been mentioning, if you bring one of those guys, they have to perform. They can't just be a guy.
Yes.
And I do think that they need to take a big swing at pass rush, because Jerry Hughes isn't getting any younger. Ed Oliver's complete toss up at this point. Who knows what they have out of that ninth overall pick? They just need a difference maker on defense. Somebody that's going to disrupt Patrick Mahomes some way, somehow. If they don't dive headfirst into that first week of free agency and go after one of those guys, I'd be disappointed if I was a Bills fan.
I'm excited for the upcoming week. I'm nervous. I'm feeling all kinds of different things. Oh, Chris, it's going to be rough. It's going to be rough around the Rock Pile Report podcast.
Get that bourbon ready. You're getting low.
I was going to say, I'm going to need a new bottle of this. Chris laughed and when he handed it to me to start the show, and he goes, I think you might have enough. Maybe. Tyler, I appreciate all of your time tonight. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. You're just an easy conversation about football. I love it. What do you have coming up over at GoLongTD.com? What are some of these things? I mean, we've already talked a lot about it, but what do you have coming up in the next week or two that we can kind of tease?
Well, man, hey, I really appreciate the time. This was a lot of fun. Definitely hope we can do it again. So thanks for having me, man. This week I will have on Thursday a story on Marquez Valdes-Scandling for the Packers. So still have a Packers following from those Milwaukee Journal Sentinel days. And, you know, he's one of those polarizing players. And in Green Bay, it's a different fan base. You know, I mean, similar to Buffalo, but, you know, they love you to death, and they almost love you so much they can backfire on a guy like MVS. So we talked a lot about that down there.
Here's a question about that guy. Is that a byproduct of having won Super Bowls before? Because I feel like here in Buffalo, the dynamic between a player and a fan becomes, if you're good and I think you might be the thing that gets me an inch closer towards a Super Bowl, I'll love you to death. I'll go to war for you. Whereas
no doubt.
In teams that they don't have that pressure of not having won a Super Bowl, I feel like they could be like, hey, you're great, you're great, you're great, right until the second you're not, and then you're in the doghouse.
Turn. You know, having covered both teams, you're absolutely right. I feel like, you know, the overarching kind of mood and tenor and tone of everything in Green Bay is that, like, if they go, you know, 13-3 and they lose, they went 15-1 the first year I covered the team, you know, and they lost to the Giants in the playoffs, and depression set in. It's like, oh my, you know, fire the defensive coordinator, get him out of here. They'll change this, change that. Because of that pressure to win now all the time, it's there, it's embedded. With the Bills, covering the Bills, it was like, oh my gosh, you know what? Tyrod Taylor, there's some magic here. That first training camp, people were excited in that preseason game against Carolina, I think it was. You know, you're right. This could be somebody who inches us a little closer to relevancy. I think now, though, that mentality, it kind of changes. Shifted. At least it should.
My father,
you know,
they
should be looking in the mirror as an organization right now and be like, you know what? You know, it's not good enough just to be good. You know, Sean McDermott should look in the mirror and say, hey, you know what? When I get down to the 1 or 2 yard line, I'm not kicking a field goal. I'm going to go for it next time. You know, that you've got to kind of change your thinking now that you're the hunted. You're not the hunter.
My father sent me a text message the night before the Baltimore Ravens game. And he was essentially saying, look, he goes, well, actually, no. Actually, that text, he sends me motivational texts before games now. And my listeners understand why, and my father and I's dynamic about football. But he sent me a text before the Indy game, and he goes, that it was probably about 9 o'clock at night the day before. And he goes, that feeling in the pit of your stomach right now is from decades of losing. It's from decades of this team being inadequate.
Yeah, he goes, that's what it is.
He goes, and it's also excitement because you don't know what could happen tomorrow, and that you could, like, you could watch your team accomplish something wild that you never dreamed of, that you haven't seen in your adult life. Embrace this. He goes, enjoy this 24 hours because next year, after we win this football game and this comes back around, it's going to be seen as a foregone conclusion that you're going to win it. And he was like, there's something to say for that excitement is going to be replaced with expectation. And I didn't believe him. And now here we are, a team that just came back from the AFC Championship game, and you're talking about, isn't it a disappointment if they don't make it, right? And you're flirting with what you're talking about up in Green Bay. I'm sure it's going to be a great article. I can't wait to go check it out. Where can people find you on social media? Just your web handles, just so everybody knows.
Definitely. Yep. On Twitter, it's at Ty Dunn, D-U-N-N-E. And you can go right to the website to golongtd.com. And you got two options. You can either plug your email in and get all the free stories. And, you know, that's kind of a limited amount there. Or you can go all in, subscribe, $7 a month, $70 a year. Like I said, if you get that year annual membership, we'll send you a hoodie right now. Zoom happy hours, profiles, features, all that good stuff. Boom, right in the end. That's kind of the beauty of it. We got a website, but when you sign up, you read everything right in your email, too. That's kind of the Substack newsletter model. And I got to say, guys, like I tell everybody in Buffalo this, the foundation for this whole venture has been Western New York. I think living here, having covered the Bills, all of that has helped. But, you know, I see the emails that come through, and then there are some familiar names. And I hear from people on social media. It's a lot of, like, just good people right here in Buffalo supporting Go Long, supporting my family, essentially. And I can't thank everybody enough. So if they want to do that, I'd be eternally grateful. And let me know what you want to read. I mean, I want this to be a community. I don't want it to be a dictation of me just, you know, telling you what's important. Tell me what player do you want to learn about? What trend do you want to learn about? Oh, it's a very interactive type of deal that I want to keep building over time.
Tyler Dunn, golongtd.com. You can find him on Twitter at Ty Dunn. That's T-Y-D-U-N-N-E. Surprisingly good conversation from somebody that has been on national television and radio with you, a drunk asshole.
I was going to say, who are you surprised by, him or me? But you finished it off there. I get it. I love the fact that you underestimate my ability to talk to other people who know what the hell they're talking about. Even after all these years, you still don't believe in me. But that's completely fine. Ultimately, I'm just really happy. I mean, that was one of the most gratifying conversations I've had in a long time when it comes to talking about sports. Chris, this is why we do this. These are the reasons we do this type of stuff. I love it. I urge you guys to go follow Tyler. And tomorrow, Matt Perino of NewYorkUpstate.com is going to join us for part two of our roster review and free agency preview. This time, focusing on the offensive side of the football. We're going to talk about the state of that side of the ball and how that's... Chris, I think that's where we should probably spend most of our money, right?
I don't know. You got to get by the Chiefs. So however you think you got to get by the Chiefs, whether it's defense or score more points than them.
But maybe they're the team that's going to regress. Maybe it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to talk about the market influences at these positions where Bills fans are most interested. It's going to be a great conversation. Make sure you check it out. But we got to get the hell out of here. I'm Drew Gear. That's Chris Krueger. That was Tyler Dunn. And this has been the Rock Pile Report.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.